Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. We are back for another great year of Joshi. My name is Taylor, joined, as always, by my very good friend and co-host, Kelly. Kelly, happy 2026.
Happy 2026. New year, same boys. We're here to talk to you about Joshi Wrestling.
And as always, with the beginning of a new year comes a lot of Joshi action that we will be getting to on this episode. But before we do, we got to get in the plugs. Follow us on Blue Sky at J-Bomb Audio this very week. What do they call them?
I don't know, but I like to call it that.
I posted. I think they call them posts.
Yeah, which is so boring.
Because it also sounds like I created like a blog.
Yeah.
I posted. I have to say, one of the funniest things I've tweeted under the Jumping Bomb Audio account on either X or Blue Sky, in my opinion, a very niche joke. So if you want to know what that joke is, go on Blue Sky and follow us. You can also follow Kelly at Comic Geek Kelly. You can follow me at Tay Mambo. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice. And if that app of choice is Apple Podcasts, we would really appreciate a 5-star rating and review. And if you're feeling extra generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. So let's get right into it. As we said, a lot of action to cover from the last 3 weeks that we have been off. So let's dive right into Stardom. A bunch of shows. The first one was a Korakuen right after our last episode on December 24th. The magic of Jumping Bomb Audio in action as my most underrated pick for 2025, Yuta Mizumori, immediately winning a title, defeating May Sierra for the high-speed title on that show. So you're welcome.
Tara Okada, confirmed listener.
On December 25th, they had the latest New Blood show. The main event on that show was Haneko retaining the Future of Stardom title over Rion. And then, of course, the big show of the last 3 weeks on the 29th of December was Dream Queendom from Ryogoku Sumo Hall in front of 6,563 fans. Quite a number. Kelly, what'd you think about this big show?
I thought it was pretty good. And this is not for the show itself, but for Stardom World. I don't know how long they've had this new video player, but now I can airdrop it to or airplay it to my TV with pretty much zero issues, which is awesome because that used to be a giant pain in the ass. So it made for enjoying this show so much easier.
I also enjoyed the show as well. Now, Kelly, did you watch the Japanese or English?
Japanese. I was honestly, I was not aware there was English.
I did watch the English commentary. It was just Walker Stewart by himself. I thought he did a good job. I think he has a little bit of what we talked about a few months ago with Balianaki on commentary, which is that sometimes he tends to, at the beginning of matches, keep sort of, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for.
Not God over, damn!
No, not over-explain, but like keep doing like the, you know, like, okay, I'll just take the Hazuki Fuwa-chan match, for example. Like, Fuwa-chan comes into this match and she has to dig down to find out if she can make it in a wrestling ring, and will, her spirit be broken by her friend Hazuki. Meanwhile, there's like eight moves happening in the ring. Like, a wrestling match is happening and someone else is on the side monologuing about the match. I give
on that note, did you watch Wrestle Kingdom with the English commentary?
I did. I haven't seen the whole show yet.
Did you watch the opener Rumble?
I haven't. Literally, I was watching through it. I skipped ahead to watch the Joshi and haven't gone back to the Rumble.
Okay, so the DDT hunk comes out with his boy band and they're singing. And you know, they're doing a performance. And Walker Stewart and Chris Charlton are just talking over it. Like, for the first half of it, they just keep on rambling. And I'm like, guys, this is incredibly rude.
Yeah, I mean, my one sort of, like, I'll give you this, is that, like, when we talked about it with Balianaki, Balianaki does it when he's on commentary with, like, four people.
Yeah.
And Walker Stewart was by himself the entire evening. So I give him a little bit more of leniency because, you know, I'm sure, you know, having never commentated wrestling alone, but having done this podcast alone, that it's much harder.
Yeah.
To just sit there and like speak and know, okay, I'm going to stop, because if you stop speaking, there is no commentary.
Yeah. You know who they should stick with him? Who can speak English? Waka. Because then you get the commentary team of Walker Tsukiyama.
I was going to say they've stuck the wrestlers with them before, but I guess they were just sort of like, we don't care this time.
I was very much hoping, going back to Wrestle Kingdom, that Balianaki was just going to jump on the English commentary team when he showed up with Chris Brooks. But I couldn't wait for that to happen, and then he didn't, and I was very sad.
Well, let's go through all of these matches. Won't deep dive into some of them, but just cover them. The pre-show opener, Kelly, did you watch this pre-show opener?
I did, but I remember like nothing about it because I watched it like the pre-show the day it happened, and then didn't watch the rest of the show until like 2 days ago.
Well, the pre-show match was Emma Mashima and Kyokyo Furusawa defeating An Kanaya and Matoi Hamabe in 10 minutes and 46 seconds. A good length of match. I don't know that I have much to say about it either, so that's the result.
Yeah, that's right. That's the one thing I remember about it is like, damn, they got a good amount of time.
The first official match of the show was a tag team match. The Neo Genesis team of Azumi and Starlight Kid defeating the God's Eye duo of Suri and Tomoka Inaba. I thought this match was really good. Good start to the show. The result played into some things that happened later in the show, so made sense why it was on the show. Not anything mind-blowing or crazy, but I thought just, you know, four very solid workers working very well to start the show.
Yeah, I thought it was good, but a teensy bit disappointing just with the people involved, you know? So, but overall, good match.
The next match was the Rumble match. I won't read through every wrestler who was in this, but if they weren't somewhere else on the card, they were here. It was won by Rina, who eliminated Miyu Amasaki last to win. Lady C, I had Kelly derangement syndrome. when Lady C came out, because I was like, is that Lady C? And then it was Lady C. I said this to Kelly, I messaged you this while I was watching the show, is that if you made a Stardom wrestling video game, you of course would have like a create a wrestler template for the game. And I feel like often these younger wrestlers are like, oh, we're getting better. We're getting more opportunities. And you know that they're going to get more opportunities because they go towards looking like the generic Stardom wrestler.
Yep.
Like there's a center, like there's a, you know, whole bunch, you know, some people are very far away from looking like Stardom wrestlers, but the younger wrestlers, it's like, the more advanced in the career you get, the closer you get to looking like 50% of the rest of the roster.
I mean, look at the difference for Yuna Mizumori between when she debuted and now.
Yes.
She looks like an entirely different human being.
Like, I also was wondering who is the most, like, standard Stardom-looking wrestler?
I think it's, for me, it's Ami Sarai because I completely don't recognize her ever when she shows up. And then I'm like, oh yeah, that's who that is. Okay.
So that took me by surprise. I think probably because I hadn't seen, I'm trying to remember the last match I watched of hers, but Fooking and Death did make me laugh. I was like, okay, in this scenario, in a match that doesn't really matter, that's a bit weird and silly anyway, I'm like, okay, this is good.
Yeah, that's the perfect spot for her.
Like, and also the crowd being into her, I was like, okay, like, I can get behind this. Of course, the most excited was to see Yuzuki Aikawa, who, in my mind, is like a top 10 all-time Stardom wrestler. And it's so bizarre to me that she shows up like now every few years, looks amazing, like looks like you want a professional wrestler to look like, wrestles well, and then is like, goodbye. like came out, started bleeding, had blood on her face, you know, is 45 years old and does not look 45 years old.
She must like have a really good real job.
Or I don't know, you know, but I'm just like, great seeing her. That was the most excited. Of course, Kyoko Kotatsu, Maya Fukuda coming out. And I'm like, oh, Maya Fukuda. And I'm like, no, she hasn't been Maya Fukuda for like many months, but I can't. Yeah. She hasn't done anything.
No. She will always be Maya Fukuda until she does something.
I was like, yeah, that's the thing. I'm like, you haven't done anything. I need to have you do something where I'm repeatedly being like, ah, yes, Kyoko Katatsu.
Until my lone memory isn't you in Glee.
Which Walker was talking about on commentary as she was wrestling, and I'm like, not helping.
Yeah. She got her ass beat in a shoot fight for Glee.
Olympia was there. Yeah. I mean, there isn't really much to say. This was very much a get people on the card who are not wrestling anywhere else. Except for, it felt like there was a couple people, like obviously Rena winning, but like Hina felt like she was doing something there. Yeah. Like a lot of people felt like they were coming in to do nothing. And it at least felt like, okay, Rena, Aikawa, Hina was coming in to be like, ah, this is my beginning of 2026 type thing. Yeah. So the next match was an 8-person tag team match. The Empress, Nexus, Venus, team of Hanako, Micah, and Xena teaming with Megan Bain went to a double countout with Mi Vida Loca, Bozilla, Itsuki Aoki, Rina Yamashita, and Suzu Suzuki in 16 minutes and 27 seconds. Didn't think this was bad. I think if you're going to a double countout, I'd rather you not wrestle for 17 minutes.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Before you do it. Like, the match was fine. There was nothing really wrong with it. It didn't really stick out to me all that much. And I'm fine with the double countout to be like, oh, we're fighting outside and we're blah, blah, blah. Although at one point, Bozilla was, I mean, I don't even remember who the legal person was at the end of the match. Bozilla was standing like 6 inches from the apron. And I was like, why don't you just try rolling inside for 5 seconds? But maybe she wasn't the legal. I don't remember who was legal at the end of the match. But yeah, fine. I mean, sort of gets over this, we're fighting and, you know, we can't be contained thing. But do it after 9 minutes and not 17.
Oh, does that mean it's going to be time for, like, the annual cage match soon, you think?
Well, that's usually in, like, May, right?
Like
spring?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, they may build to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would make sense. Because you've already got, well, at least teams of four.
Yeah.
So, could be. Then we got to the business end of the card. The first match, Fuachan falling in defeat in 11 minutes and 33 seconds to Hazuki. Kelly, what'd you think of this match?
I thought this rocked. Fantastic re-debut match for Fuachan. You know, gonna say the hot take. She's better than Aaron Wolf. Don't come for me, New Japan fans. She's a natural in the ring. Like, she just moves really well. The Shining Wizard she hit was so crisp. Like, that was tremendous. I do think I have to reserve my final judgment on her until we see her in like a big enough spot where she's not guided through it by Hazuki. But other than that, I thought she was great. I went 4 stars on this.
Yeah, certainly not. This is a weird way to say it, but not upset that she's like on this roster now, because I think she's shown that she is very good. I mean, she has the benefit over Aaron Wolf, who I haven't watched that match yet, of having wrestled before.
Well, she wrestled once.
Also, she didn't wrestle Evil. So,
yeah.
Who knows what that meant? Fuachan versus Evil. yeah, I thought it was good. I probably would be around 4 stars, maybe a little bit lower. I mean, it was a pretty quick match. It was less than 12 minutes. So I think it was good to sort of go in. I think the main point was sort of like, yes, I still am able to remember how everyone thought I was pretty good. Like, I am pretty good.
Yeah.
More than any bigger sort of, like, obviously the story is like, oh, I'm back and I'm looking for forgiveness for my sins.
What did she get canceled for?
I believe, and this may be wrong, but I believe that she tweeted at some other comedian, like, you should kill yourself. it was some tweet that she made where, or it was like, and this is all sort of secondhand for me, I think, sort of vaguely reading things.
Yeah.
I think she tweeted something that people considered offensive to someone who I think was like her friend.
Okay.
But people saw it and was like, this is bad. And she came out and was like, I'm sorry, like, and apologized. But obviously Japanese culture is very strict about that. I don't remember if that's what it was, but it was something like that.
She let the Xbox Live out for a second.
Yeah, I think it was just a thing where, oh wait, here we go. On August 4th, 2024, she made a post mocking this comedian, telling them, kill yourself since you're not great. The post was promptly deleted. She apologized. The comedian accepted the apology, but she still got a lot of backlash. I guess she was doing commercials for Google that they took down. And then a week later, she was like, I'm going on hiatus, which lasted a year.
You know, at some point, she's going to have a heel turn, and she's going to tell someone in a promo, kill yourself because you're not great, and it's going to fucking hit like crack in the 80s.
Well, it also appears that the comedian that she made fun of was doing some sort of like telethon charity event or something. So I think that probably doesn't help.
No, that definitely does not help.
So yes, I think that's, I think that's the gist of it. Yeah. You're not so great, so please die, I think is the, yeah, I deeply regret my actions and I'm committed to reflecting on my behavior. And then went on a hiatus for a year until she showed up in Stardom.
She's going to turn a heel. She's going to say that to someone. It's going to be fucking awesome.
The next match was a special singles match. Not a special singles match. That only happens in Gabe Sapolsky run.
No, that'd promotions. Be a special grudge match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had all these dumb... I probably still have all the emails I used to get from Evolve with all their different, you know... It's not just a random singles match. It's a special dream match. Was a singles match. Seri defeating Natsupoi in 18 minutes and 20 seconds. I think this was my favorite match of the show. I think. They just hit each other very hard for a lot of it, which I enjoyed.
Kelly, Dudes Rock Girls Edition.
Got a 4.75 in the Wrestling Observer. Although the Wrestling Observer, I have to say,
yeah, I don't.
The ratings are so fucked over there.
It's nonsense.
Like, it doesn't even really make any sense anymore. Like, what does 4.75 mean in Wrestling Observer ranking?
I would say it's closer to 4 now.
But supposedly it's not.
Yeah, which
supposedly
I think is
Dave
a bunch
is like
of bullshit.
The scale goes to 5, but then oftentimes I give things more than 5.
Yeah, I'll give this random ladder match on a SmackDown 5.
Like 4.25 now seems like don't even waste your time.
Yeah. Well, it's like when we were talking in the Slack where he gave the Aaron Wolf debut 3.5 and we're all like, damn, he hated that match.
It's like, well, that was no good. Yeah. So anyway, but I really enjoyed it. What'd you think, Kelly?
This was awesome. They have such great chemistry. And I really love that, like, Natsupoi just comes across as, like, the cute fairy princess. Is such a credible, hard-hitting ass-kicker. Like, just, she can, you know, she beats the shit out of people, and it's like, yeah, no, that fits. That totally fits. Like, they're both so good at this style. I really loved it. I went 4.5 on it.
The next match was the Goddesses of Stardom title match, the hate duo of Natsuka Tora and Ruaka BMI 2000, defeated Aya Sakura and Sayaka Karara in 19 minutes and 58 seconds. If you've listened to this podcast one time before, you will know what I think about this match.
Yeah.
It just felt like nothing.
This felt like 4 hours.
And it's also like, okay, great. Like, Hazuki Fuwa-chan, Seri Natsupoi, you're like, yes, we're building up. And then it's like, okay. And then I have to sit on my hands for 20 minutes and like watch a 3-star tag team match.
Wow. That's generous.
I mean,
what are you, Dave?
That's 3 out of my on my 9-star scale.
Ah, perfect. Yes, yes, yes. I went 1.
I just like 1 to me is reserved for like these people should not be wrestling.
Yes, 1-star.
Well, yeah. It just is a thing, and it especially annoys me because we've seen in previous years in 2025, it's like, you know, when Hanan and Saeeda had those belts, they were coming out there and having high energy tag team matches.
Yep.
You know, FWC, they were doing the same thing. It's like, you can have it be that so the tag title is not just like, eh, we'll do this. It can be like, okay, we're still building the energy, because then it felt like, ugh. And then the semi-main starts and I'm like, okay, I gotta pick the energy up again because I just lost all my energy watching that match.
I stopped watching after that match. I was like, I will not be able to give anything else my full attention, because this tag title match, I was watching, I think it was like 8 p.m. this past Thursday, and I almost fell asleep. And I said, once that was done, I was like, I will pick this up later, because I cannot fully judge these things fairly if I watch this in my sleepy state.
I just don't understand. I'm like, what is it, you know, what is it about Tora that's like, here we go again?
She must be the nicest person in the world.
Like, and even Ruaka, I'm like, Ruaka is fine, but I also don't think on the, you know, right below the semi-main on one of your biggest shows of the year.
Like, they are, if we had to do a ranking, I think they would be the two worst wrestlers on the roster.
I mean, and you look at, you know, not a ton of people, but they're, you know, in the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
But you're like Koguma down there putzing away in the Rumble. May Sierra, I mean, Miyu Amasaki, you know, Rana.
Yeah.
You know, like, Yuzuki Aikawa. I'm like, I would rather see her up there. She's
the
good.
Rest of the roster is an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought Aya and Sayaka were, like, fine.
They did what they could.
But I don't know. I was like, well, I don't know if they're fine because they're wrestling these two, or they're just fine. I have a feeling it's the former. Like, there's only so much you can wrestle yourself.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And just the pace of the match was so slow, and at some point I realized, like, wait, Ruaka and Tora are doing the same spots they've already done. Like, they ran through their offense and are like, well, we got to do this again.
So the semi-main of the show was for the Wonder of Stardom title, the champion Konami retaining, defeating Saeeda in 20 minutes and 34 seconds. I think I've fallen fully out on Konami, where I was sort of like, ah, this will be good. And it wasn't bad. Like, I probably would go like 3.75 or 4 stars. Like, I thought it was very solid, but there was just something there where I was like, ah, I think I expected a little bit more.
I thought the first half was kind of bad, but as soon as Konami dropped the heel shit, then it got really good. And I loved the second half. I thought it was tremendous.
What would you go?
I went 4.25.
All right.
I think Konami is just really bad at being a heel, but we're stuck in this world where she has to be a heel for some reason.
Yeah, it's just this weird thing where it's like the Saya thing, undeniable success. That worked.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very well. It feels to me like they book things being like, once you are in hate, that means your character is good.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what you do. You're in hate, so that means you have a good character.
Yeah.
And an interesting character. Like, and that could be why Tora keeps hanging around, because it's like, well, she's in hate. Like, she's the heel. She has to be up there. She's the heel. Of course. Oh, we need a heel. Okay, Konami will turn heel. Oh, and now they can win championships because they're a heel and they have a quote-unquote good character.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just happy there wasn't, like, rampant box people being hit with boxes and
yes.
tripping and spitting and misting and all that stuff.
Nope.
Like, I was
no
like,
blackface scandal implications.
I was like, at least we have that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also just really love Saeeda, so I was like, ah, this will be really good. And just felt like there's probably other opponents that could be better.
Saya, when she came out with the face paint on, I was like, is she doing a tribute to the Bullet Club hunter Yoshitatsu?
Aren't we all at times in life doing a tribute to the Bullet Club? What is Yoshitatsu up to? Where is he?
Is he
retired?
No, he's in All Japan. He's with the heel unit, I think. Oh, wait, no. Sorry, he's in NOAH with the heel unit.
Well, that would be why.
Team 2000X or whatever.
Oh, he wrestled for something called DXCN. Wait a minute. Oh, no.
Degeneration X Cartoon Network.
Although you say that he's in NOAH with that unit, he only had 3 matches in NOAH last year.
I don't think he wrestles much anymore. I think he just comes to the ring with them.
His last match in NOAH was in September, losing to Daga in 32 seconds. I mean, that makes sense. How old is he?
I think he's like Jado now. Like,
he's
that's,
48. Yeah.
That's just his role.
All right, yeah. Anyway. The main event of the show was for the World of Stardom title match. Saya Kamatani successfully retaining her World of Stardom title, defeating Sayori Ono in 22 minutes and 40 seconds. Kelly, what'd you think of this match?
This was awesome. I went 4.75. These two lunatics just went out there and hit each other in the face and dumped each other on their heads for the entire duration of the match. Awesome. Awesome shit. What a war. I had a moment when I was just looking at my notes where I was incredibly confused what I was trying to convey because autocorrect butchered it. I was trying to say that they were it was incredibly dangerous and worrying when they were fighting their way through the sumo boxes because the little railings are such tripping hazards. I was very concerned about the both of them when they were doing that.
I really liked it too. Very close with the Sari Natsupoi match as my favorite of the evening. I would probably be 4.5. I just think I think it's the right decision. Obviously big Sari fan, but I don't know why in any coming up, what am I trying to say? I don't know why you would take the belt off her for many months. Like, this is actually the person where it's like, yes, keep the belt on her, as opposed to the previous long Stardom runs where it was like, well, we don't have anyone. Just like, she'll hold the belt for a year and a half because who knows? Like, yes, keep the belt on her.
Yeah, no, she should have the belt for a good long time.
I mean, comes out, feels like a star wearing that bird mask question. Is that what that was?
I don't know. At first, I thought it covered her whole head, and because it reminded me of the mask Femto wears in Berserk. So that's what I thought it was, but then it looked more like a Tai Chi mask when she got closer to the ring. But either way, it looked cool as hell.
Anyway, feels like a star, has really figured out the in-ring style. Just really good stuff. Really good end to the show. Starlight Kid coming out after the match, which should be very exciting.
Yeah.
To see. That should be another good one. You know, you don't want to do too much of feeding your upper mid card into the wood chipper that may be Saya, but I'm like, in terms of a match that should be very good, that should be very good. What else happened in Stardom on the third? Stardom had two shows. At one of those shows, they had a day-night doubleheader. One of those shows, Azumi and Miyu Amasaki became the number one contenders for the tag titles. Surprise! A week later, they had that match and lost to Hate, who retained the tag titles. But the biggest news, Stardom having Korakins on both the 10th and 11th of January, the biggest news is that Maki Ido has signed to Stardom. Kelly, you watched her debut match, which happened on the 11th.
I did, and it was pretty good. I don't think it was like a top-tier match, but, you know, I think it'll do a lot of good to show people that she can fit into this company fairly easily. Because I know there's quite a few people who out there who are like, ah, how's this ever going to work? And it's like, well, she coasts on her gimmick a lot. And knows when the big spots are, but I think she'll do just fine in Stardom. Of course, she loses the debut match, as you know, a lot of times you do when you jump from a company. And it looked to set up a future singles match with Aya Sakura, which should be cool. Sakura and Kurara hated her guts and did everything they could to beat the shit out of her. It was awesome. After Maki challenged Sakura, when she left, her music played, and Aya Sakura was very upset that Maki Ido was getting her music played, even though she lost the match.
Well, in her first promo, she called out a lot of people. She called out Saya, so appearing to set up a lot of things. Look, I will say, I am a doubter. I'm not an extreme doubter. Like, obviously, Ido is over. She is very popular, you know, and I think they're paying her a lot of money to be there.
Yes.
My biggest concern is that she was improving in ring. The gimmick got really over, and it appeared that, like, getting better in ring became priority 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was like, she's getting better, and then all of a sudden she wasn't getting better, and it didn't seem like that really mattered to her. Now look, there's been much lower level wrestlers who have come into Stardom, and lower level wrestlers from Tokyo Joshi.
Yeah.
And been pretty good. I mean, like Mina.
Mm-hmm.
Was like a nothing, like in ring wise, was like a nothing.
Yeah.
In Tokyo Joshi,
Mina was 100% boobs.
Yes.
That's all she brought to the table. And then she went to Stardom and became awesome.
Yeah. I just think my concern is that at some point, if the improvements don't happen, if they don't happen as fast as they need to, whatever, that she falls back on the gimmick and just becomes a mid-card, like, crazy middle finger. Blah.
I think that's entirely possible, but also I think for the money they're paying her, they'll want to see more of a return on their investment. And I think she'll probably be more motivated by that to perform at a higher level.
Well, we will see. I mean, I hope so, because, you know, we covered that period on this podcast when we were like, oh, this is the Ido chance, when she was getting those title shots and we thought she was finally going to win the thing. And then, I hope she gets a lot better. I mean, that's what I hope of every single wrestler and every single company I watch. I hope they become the best wrestler I've ever seen, because then I'll watch them. But we'll see. I think it's just mainly a reaction to the last, year of Tokyo Joshi, where it became almost solely about, I'm a crazy, you know, wrestling.
Because she was a GCW fly-in at that point.
Yes. And she had fully become a GCW, like, here's my bit.
Yep.
Type wrestler. Yeah. You know, wrestling Minoru Suzuki. Like, okay. Like, not really want to see. But again, I did have a match of hers on my top 10 of the year.
See?
Last year. So it certainly is possible. Look, I'll say this. Either way, it's very interesting.
Yeah. No, it's a very interesting jump. And I think it's best for all involved, because Tokyo Joshi wasn't doing anything with her, because they knew, like, hey, you're going to leave. So we're not going to put you in a big spot now, because you could be gone any day. And so they don't have to kind of book around her. And now Stardom gets a new wrestler, and she's in a better place. So I think it'll work out.
What else was happening in Joshi? Marigold had a number of
Before we move on from that Stardom show, I do want to talk about the Hazuki and May Sierra match that was also on there. For the whatever the hell that CMLL title is. This match was awesome. They worked so much harder than they needed to for this dopey title. Like, it was one of my favorite matches of the year so far, which, again, we're only 11 days into it, but whatever. Great match. I went 4.25 on it. Hazuki and May Sierra both went nuts here. And, you know, it's like, it's good to have weird little belts like this around, because then you can have consequential matches like this where it's just like, oh, yeah, we can just have them go out and have a cool singles match. Why not? Yeah, so if you are going to go and watch the Ido debut match, make sure to keep on watching for the CMLL women's title match.
All right. Well, now we go from that, something Kelly really loves, to something Kelly loves even more, and that would be the promotion of Marigold.
Oh, I love Marigold. Love the hat man, always falling asleep.
Marigold had a number of shows over the last few weeks. They had a Corican Hall on December 27th. That was a one-night tag tournament, which was won by Sarah Yamaoka and Shino. That tag tournament contained two time limit draws, and also there was a separate singles match that ended in count out. So Rossi never change. Hashtag Rossi never change.
Observer Hall of Fame worthy.
They had a show on New Year's Eve that I believe went from New Year's Eve into New Year's Day. The big thing there was Sarah Yamaoka winning the Rookie of the Year tournament. And then they had their big show on January 3rd. This show was a pay-per-view on Wrestle Universe. And I have to say, look, I know Stardom, you know, these big shows are pay-per-views. But when the big show is a pay-per-view with Stardom, you can then watch it like 5 days later on Stardom World.
Yeah.
With these Marigold pay-per-views, you have to wait like 6 weeks. I think it's 30 days, but it's ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
You know, I think at some point, someone in Marigold needs to say to themselves, we are not Stardom. We've talked about this. You know, the day after Tokyo Joshi put on, I would say, a really great show, at least had, I think, a killer match.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're saying, well, the show wasn't very good. Whatever. It had one really great match. To me, I mean, no one on earth talks about Marigold anymore.
Nope. The only time I see people talking about it is I saw one thing about this show at all posted online, and it was the crazy looking pile driver on the broken table that made, I think, Miku Aono like scorpion and look like she was going to break her spine. That's it. That's all I saw.
Yes, and actually the one person I know who talks about it is John from Wrestling Omakase. So to be fair, they talk about it. But it just feels like they, and we had this conversation like 2 months ago in a different form.
Mm-hmm.
But they walk around thinking we are, you know, fucking great. You know, we are great wrestling. Meanwhile, you know, it's like, oh, you want to watch us pay $60 a month on top of already paying for Wrestle Universe. I mean, that's a separate thing. Look, if people are going to charge X, like Tokyo Joshi does it sometimes where they're like, hey, we're doing wrestling on a train. It's going to be a pay-per-view. For that, I'm like, okay, you're talking about something extra. It's not a main show.
Yes.
And I'm sure that filming, for example, on a train is, from a financial point, probably you got to pay a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, like, that's fine. I'm just so tired of every time I go to Wrestle Universe to watch a Marigold show, I've got to pay, you know, $25.
You got to pay the hat man toll.
You haven't, none of these shows have shown me that the show would be worth $10.
No.
You know, they had one good show last year. You know, I'm not paying $30 to watch these matches.
You know, and I was just thinking about this. I was just saying Natsuka Tora and Ruaka are like the two worst people in Stardom. I think they might be in the top half of the roster if you move them over to Marigold.
Oh, I mean, easily. yeah. Anyway, the top four of that show, Darkness Revolution explodes in the Twin Star title match. Chiaki and Mita Matsui retaining the tag titles over Nagisa Nozaki and Rei Seto.
Oh, that's the match where you sent me the graphic and I was like, damn, we're getting the worst match of the year out of the way 3 days into the year.
Victoria Yuzuki retained the United National title against Shoko Koshino. Mayu Iwatani winning the GHC women's title from Takumi Aroha, and Miku Aono retaining the Marigold World title over Mai Sakurai. That is the results there. Seedling. Boy, I have some interesting things to say about Seedling in this episode.
Oh, okay.
I didn't watch this show, but between this and what's coming up, I have some interesting things. So they ran a Korakuen on the 26th of December, which drew 500 fans. Now, right. Spoilers ahead, they were outdrawn easily by Ice Ribbon.
Ooh.
In Korakuen Hall.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
And the main event of the show, Hanori Hana and Unagi Saika winning the tag titles from Mio Shirai and Natsu Samire, made me think, Kelly, I have trivia for you.
Okay.
Who is the current Beyond the Sea champion?
Oh, shit. okay. Hang on. It's not Vaney.
Correct.
She lost it. Who did she lose it to? Fuck. it's not... I don't know why, but something in my head is telling me Jaguar Yokota, and I know that's wrong.
By the way, I'm telling you that Vaney lost the title two people ago.
Jeez, really?
Yes.
Fuck.
I mean, I'll give you a hint. The one before was the gold. I believe when I said it on the show, you called it the gold watch title reign.
Yes. God, no, I have no idea who the seedling champion is now.
So Makoto beat Vaney back in
That's
June.
Right. Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
Makoto held it till August, where she was defeated by Hiroyo Matsumoto.
Oh, okay.
Matsumoto has held the title since August and has not defended it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That sounds right.
Now, we'll leave that there because I'm going to have take a different tone when we get to the upcoming shows.
Okay.
So just leave that there. Sometimes when I'm writing out all these notes, I really go through it in my mind. Oz Academy had a show on December 30th. Hiroyo Matsumoto and Zones defeated Mika Iwata and Miyuki Takase to retain the Oz Academy tag team titles. I know John, again, from Wrestling Omakase was there and very much enjoyed that match. I haven't seen it yet, but got a
I've been enjoying
there.
Playing Where's Waldo with John when I'm watching wrestling shows in the past couple of weeks.
I mean, it wasn't hard on Dream Queendom. That was like page one of Where's Waldo.
Yeah.
And then Oz had a show on January 4th. It is the 30th anniversary of Oz, and it is Mayumi Ozaki's 40th anniversary. Doesn't really have anything to do with the show. Hiroyo Matsumoto defeated Kakaru to win a one-night tournament there, but interesting. Another big show, of course, was Tokyo Joshi's January 4th show at Korakuen Hall in front of a sellout 1,564 fans. I said this in our year in recap episode. I think you got to start looking at Miyu Watanabe drawing some nice crowds.
Yes.
I know it's January 4th. There's a lot of people there. I mean, last year she drew 1450 or something in the main event. This year, 1564. I mean, their previous high had been 1200 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with one it being 1-4, that obviously probably contributes to a lot of it, but a very good number, a very good crowd for them. Kelly, what'd you think about this show?
I thought it was mostly good with an incredible main event. There was some not great stuff in the first half, but overall an enjoyable show. It's Tokyo Joshi on the 4th, so the vibes are always fun at the very least. So I had a good time with it, but it's one of those where if I was trying to recommend the show to someone, I would probably just tell them to skip to the main.
Yeah, and I know that you have an opinion. You have an opinion about the show that I don't agree with.
Oh, man.
Because I saw you post it, and I said, I'll save it for the recording of this episode.
Oh, wow. I wish I could remember what that opinion was.
No, I remember what it was.
Good.
I'm about to call you out.
Oh, shit.
So let's just run through the bottom of the card. Chika Nanase and Uda Takami defeating Ren Konatsu and Shion Kanzaki. Shion, the new rookie, the other rookie, was supposed to debut on the show, did not debut because of stamina something.
I think they called it conditioning issues.
Yeah, conditioning, yes. Conditioning issues. So who knows what that means? I think that this has happened before.
Yes, and which I like that that Tokyo Joshi will say, like, "Hey, you're not ready. We'll hold off on this." Which, good. That's what you should do.
I didn't have a lot of strong feelings about Shion, except for she looks like Rika Tatsumi from the back.
Yeah, she does.
Especially with the gear, and I knew it wasn't her, obviously, but I was like, well, looks like Rika.
Yeah. My big takeaway on Shion is that her entrance music rocks.
Yeah, but not in-ring wise. I don't know that there was a lot that really stuck out to me. I mean, there was no like Ren debut, like flipping all over the place and being like, whoa.
Yeah, she was fine.
She was fine. Yeah. Toga and Yuna Manase defeating Himawari and Kira Summer. Not much to say there.
Did you notice the blown spot like in the closing stretch for this?
What was it?
Manase just like forgot to get in the ring and do something. So Himawari and Kira just kind of had to stand around like idiots until she remembered, oh yeah, I'm supposed to go hit one of them. And so like totally brought the closing stretch to a standstill.
The next match was the thing that now we can never be rid of, I guess, the DDT Iron Man Heavy Metal title four-way match. Aja Kong defeating Mihiro Kiryu, Rika Tatsumi, and Shino Suzuki to win the title and then immediately losing it back to Mihiro. I have to say, I've sort of said this before, I don't find this funny anymore.
No.
It's the same joke every match.
Yeah.
It's like, ah, Mihiro is going to lose the title. Ah, she's apologizing. Oh, she wins the title. Like, get the title out of Tokyo, please. I don't want to see these anymore.
There is one good recurring Mihiro bit, and it is her getting run over by a bicycle. That makes me laugh every time.
Which happened in a different match, so this match didn't. Like, it's exactly just the same match every single time.
I have no use for my hero unless she is getting hit by a bicycle.
Speaking of getting hit by a bicycle, that happened in the next match, the Tokyo Joshi Uma Princess Cup match, which was, according to Mr. Haku, not a wrestling match.
It wasn't.
It was a horse race.
Yeah.
You know, this is another thing where I'm like, it is the tradition, Hyper and Shoko. I actually didn't mind this one, but it was just a thing where even with the English commentary, like explaining everything that was going on, I often found my mind like wandering and being like, okay, this doesn't really matter.
I completely lost track of what was happening at one point.
I mean, I knew exactly what was going to happen when they were running up the stairs and Mihiro and Shion were like limping.
Yeah.
So slowly, I was like, okay, they're going to start fighting and Mihiro and Shion are going to win by like, you know, tortoise and hare.
Yeah.
Style.
They really did just throw Shion into the deep waters with the nonsense.
Which I thought was a funny idea. It just sort of was like, I'm sort of good on this.
The Nakajima Misao nonsense matches have kind of jumped the shark for me.
It feels a bit like they had like three or four good ideas. And then it was like, well, you got to do this every year. And they're like, well, we don't have any. It was like, oh, we had some stuff, and then they get to like 2 weeks before, and they're like, oh, shit, what are we going to do?
And they're like, oh, yeah, sports betting.
We'll do a horse race. Okay. So, yeah, I think, you know, I'm sure there were many people who really enjoyed this. You know, it is the 1-4 tradition, but I think increasingly I'm sort of like, oh, not for me, maybe. Also annoyed by them having held the tag titles and been very good wrestlers.
Yeah.
Like 4 months ago.
Well, that's the thing. They've had good matches with their 1-4 nonsense matches.
The problem is, I think the last 2 or 3 years, they've fully been like, these are not wrestling matches.
Yes.
And then I'm like, okay, I'm just watching a variety show then. Like,
yeah.
What was last year? Last year there was like no, there was like barely any, there was like not at all any wrestling.
Yeah, last year's I remember, all I remember about it is being incredibly confused by the whole thing.
I think the last one I enjoyed was the one where they had the eggs taped to the ring and that brought out like weapons or something.
Yeah, that one was good.
Was that like 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
That might have been three.
Because again, it was wrestling, and that's yeah. why I'm watching these shows. The next match, a tag team match, Kaya Toribami and Miyu Yamashita defeating J-Rod and Mifu Ishida in 10 minutes and 39 seconds. I enjoy this match. Happy to see Kaya get a win here, as I'm thinking about how she never wins. It was a match where, you know, J-Rod had looked so good in that Miyu title match. And in this one, it was like, ah, okay, here's the wrestler. Like when she was first announced and people were like, she needs some work. Like, and she was really good in the Miyu match. And I was like, she's pretty good. And this match, I was sort of like, ah, this is what people were talking about.
Yeah.
Like, not bad. There was nothing that I thought, oh my God, disastrous. How could you do this? But a lot of things where I was like, okay, you have not been wrestling that long. And some of these things could be tightened up a little mm-hmm. bit. But I thought a pretty, I mean, Mifu, it was tricky because I'm like, well, they probably should push both Mifu and Kaya.
Mifu's got some cool looking offense.
Like, she's good, and it seems like she signed, and then they were like, oh, we won't do anything with you.
Yeah.
Like, she goes in the confusion. They were in the same match. She goes in the confusion area with Kaya, where I'm like, you don't want to, like, try something?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and again, maybe they're doing other things where they're like, oh, I'm happy to just come here and fill in a match and lose. But I'm like, Kaya Toribami, like, why don't you try something?
Yeah. I do like enjoy her tag team with Yamashita. I think that's a cool team.
Well, yeah, and maybe that's the beginning of the push.
Yeah, I think it
you know,
might
they
be.
Won. So I'm like, and they're in the Max Hart tournament. So I'm like, maybe that is, and that would be good, because for the last 2 years I've been like, hey, she seems like she's pretty good, but she's just doing really nothing. The next match, a 6-person tag team match, the reunion of the Magical Sugar Rabbits, Mizuki and Yuka Sakazaki, teaming with Yuki Arai to defeat Max the Impaler, Palmhair Juku, and Raku. I thought it was very interesting on commentary, Mr. Haku talking about Mizuki changing, like, that they had both Yuka and Mizuki had changed their gear to black separately, like working in separate companies. Did you listen to the English commentary?
I did, but I must have zoned out for a little bit when he was talking about that.
He was like, we were all really confused why Mizuki changed her gear to black, and we should have realized that Yuka had changed her gear to black in AEW. And I was like, oh, that's, like, it doesn't really mean it. It's sort of like, whatever.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, that is sort of interesting. Like, two people who are very connected.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably the greatest Tokyo Joshi tag team of all time. That it's like, oh, why did Mizuki do this? And it turns out there's a reason, because her tag partner also did it. Like, in a totally separate company.
Well, sadly, we didn't know about Yuka because no one watches Ring of Honor.
Yes. Yeah. I thought this was a big waste of Yuka coming back.
Yeah.
Frankly. Didn't really. I sound like such a grump in the middle of this card for a show that I was like, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on these 1-4 shows, I'm like, there's so much good coming up. And also, you're like, Yuka's coming back. And you're like, ah, her match is comedy adjacent with Palm and Raku.
And you're like, in the final bit, Arai had a lot of trouble powering up Pom for her brainbuster.
Yeah, we'll talk about Yuki Arai in a second, but again, just, you know, felt like a big deal team because it's the tag team and Yuki, but just a thing where it's like, she's not getting better.
No.
Like, I think this is it. Like, a little bit Yuki Kamifuku, like, where you're like, oh, she's getting better, you know, has some work to do, and then all of a sudden you're like, ah, okay, so this is the final product of what's happening. So yeah, just didn't really think much of this. All right, Kelly, you ready?
Yes, now I'm looking through my notes and I see what you're probably upset about.
Next up was the International Princess title match. Mirai, the returning Mirai, defeating Arisu Endo in 12 minutes and 51 seconds to win the title, bringing it to Michinoku Pro. Kelly, I know your thoughts, so I will let you go first.
I was mad about this. I did not like that Mirai won here, that they decided she gets to be put over after abandoning the company for the Hat Man twice, really, because she followed him to Marigold too, and then finally realized the folly of her ways. But they still gave her the belt over Endo, which I did not care for. I thought Endo and Mirai had great chemistry. I don't like that Endo had the belt taken off her this way.
I disagree with you. I think it's very interesting. You know, I think it would be a little different if Mirai weren't going to Michinoku Pro.
That's another part of it where it's like, okay, so she's an outsider still and you're giving her the belt. Like, you have your biggest crowd in Kurikan ever. I think you should put over someone like Endo here.
I also think that if it wasn't Mirai, I don't know who it would have been, but I think Endo was losing this title on this show no matter what. Because I think the Daisy Monkey story is starting up again.
Yeah, looking at the tag tournament.
Because I think there's a very good chance they win the tag tournament and then win the tag titles, and that's their big reign. Because they had one, and the story can be, we went out, we got better, you know, Endo won the title, Suzume, you know, challenging for the Princess of Princess title, you know, making them, they went out, they made themselves better, and now they're back as a team, and they're even better than before, because they've improved individually. That, to me, seems a very obvious story. You've set it up now with, you know, one had a title and lost, one had a challenge and lost, so you're not sitting there thinking, oh, I have to do these other things. And I think it was set up with the first reign where you're like, they're going to be back here, and that's going to be, you know, the same thing they're doing now with Miyu.
Yeah.
Where the first reign was like, wow, she's good. She's got the title. Oh my God. And then she loses it to, you know, Mizuki. This is going to be the second reign where it's like, oh yeah, you thought they were good the first time. Here they are, and they're better than ever. And frankly, I mean, now we were talking about Miyu drawing people in. You know, is it Miyu? I don't know. Who's to say? But atop of Miyu and then tag titles on Daisy Monkey, I think is a very strong two. And I think it's very interesting to have Mirai, you know, you can argue, yeah, she left. Okay. But I think it's like, what is going to happen with this title? You know, I don't know. Is it going to be defended 10 times in Michinoku Pro? I have no idea.
So another thing that kind of bothered me with it, Mirai should be presented as a heel. She left the company, is coming back. She's flanked by her indie scummered friends. Like, the entire, to me, I'm just like, she should be getting booed.
I just think it's not that type of promotion unless you go all the way and you have like a Neo Bushiki goon who's like, we are comic villain, you know.
Yeah.
There's never been any other heels.
I think she should take the belt and like spray paint Great Sasuke's face on it or something. I don't know.
You know, I'm like, she's wrestling in a lot of different companies. I'm like, does she defend it there? Certainly interesting, or more more interesting than just being like, Palm Harajuku won it in a fluke. And then you're like, oh, okay, who's she gonna wrestle? Okay, she'll wrestle, you know,
Raku.
Like Raku, she'll wrestle Kira Summer. You know how that one goes.
Yeah.
Which is fine. A lot of those have been very good. But I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. You know, maybe Mirai goes to wrestle at all these companies and then she's like, hey, I'm the title holder of this and I'm defending against, you know, I know she's defending against Toga because she came out at the end and they're doing that. Maybe she draws some fans from these other rando places she's going to see it. I don't know. Just to me, I understand it's like, she left. What a betrayal, blah, blah, blah. I just don't think Tokyo Joshi operates that way.
I think Guyana should win the title from her.
They're all like, you know, best friends there. And it feels weird that you would be like, you are a demon because you left. I also really liked this match. To go to the match itself, I thought it was really good. I thought they sort of missed the story they were telling in that it felt clearly the story was like, if Mirai gets a chance, she's going to demolish Endo.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sort of did it at the end where she absolutely obliterated her with that clothesline. It felt like they needed a couple more beats in there. Like, I actually did sort of like the moment when she went, I don't remember what Mirai was going for, but her back seized up and Endo was like, just kick her in the back.
Yeah.
And do the camel clutch. Like, I was like, oh, that's really smart. But it felt like that was the story that they were going for. Sort of like, I can't, like, if I just stand in front of this person, I'm going to get obliterated. I can't do that. But it felt like they sort of missed it, but I thought that the wrestling was good enough that I went 4.25, so I very much enjoyed it. I just didn't think it was like that next level, like, oh my God, this is so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I ended up at 3.5 on it. I liked it a lot, but it made me angry.
What a rare time when we like so are so opposite from each other on something. We're usually so in sync, Kelly. 2026, we're falling apart here. the semi-main event, the Princess Tag Team title match, the champions Ober Eats, Wakano Uehara and Yuki Kamifuku defeat Haru Kazushiro and Yuki Aino in 14 minutes and 7 seconds. Another Big Show tag title match. I thought it was fine. It feels more and more like this tag team reign is just doing the job of setting up Wakana to do something after they lose the titles.
Yes.
Like, it's like, she's getting better. She's in this team. They're winning. And then she can lose them and be like, now I'm ready to, you know, maybe she is the person in, well, I guess it could be 3 months, you know. I guess I don't know how that would schedule out, but maybe she loses the tag titles and takes the international princess title off Mirai. Like, now you've also said, now I'm going back, Kelly, because I'm going to tell you why you're wrong even more now. I'm going to go back and prove it to you. Whoever beats Mirai is going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
In a way that really no one else except for Miyu, maybe the two Miyus, are in this company, where it's like someone's going to have to stand up to her and be like, I'm going to kick your ass and kick her ass and win.
Yeah, but I think also they should frame it that way instead of just being like, oh, she's back, this is great. It's like, no, fuck this bitch.
Kelly, what'd you think of the tag title match?
Rough. It was not great. Remember when there was that brief time where it looked like Kamiyu was getting really good?
Yes, I've talked about that. Yes, she was getting better, and then she plateaued.
Just kind of stopped. Just stopped getting and got worse. Then she got worse.
I mean, I think there's also a thing where it's like you're on the undercard. You're like, oh, I want more opportunities. And then you're like, oh, I'm getting more opportunities. Okay, I'm good.
Yeah. Like, my biggest takeaway from this is that Haru keeps getting better and better, and I think is going to be really great someday.
I mean, yeah, the fact that they put her in this spot speaks very confidently about how they feel, and I think she certainly is getting there. She's not there yet. I mean, I continue to think Yuki Aino is like the most underrated person in the company.
Yeah, and she's perfect to put with Haru. Like, this is a perfect tag team pair because you get Haru the reps and have a veteran alongside her that is great at tag wrestling.
So, you know, the match wasn't really anything to me, but I was like, oh, this is an interesting team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially in a world where they need, it feels like they're back to needing another, like, Daisy Monkey is getting back together. Like, name the tag teams in Tokyo Joshi.
Miyu and, Kaya. Miyu and Rika Tatsumi, but they rarely ever tag together anymore. Shoko and Misao. Haru and Yuki Aino. Who else?
But like my point of this is if you go back, I don't know, what is it? 4 years, I'll say. I don't know. No, more than 4 years. I don't know. Here are the tag teams in Tokyo Joshi. You know, Magical Sugar Rabbits, Bakuretsu Sisters, Neo Bushikigun. Like, I'm saying things that are teams that people are like, those are teams. You know, yes, it's very nice that they're doing like Miyu and Kaya Toribami. That is not a team. That's just two people who happen to be teaming together. Like, I'm talking about like people
who see those
two
become a team.
No, I'm not saying they won't ever become, hey, this is a great team. Let's stick together. I'm saying I feel like Tokyo Joshi is missing the time when they don't need a ton. They don't need like 15 tag teams, but missing a time where you could take someone and plug them into this spot, you know, to say, oh, Ober Eats needs a challenger. It's the Bakuretsu sisters.
Yeah. They definitely kind of broke up most of their teams.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying they don't really have any established teams anymore. So there's so many of these matches just feel like the champions against who's available.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it would serve them well to try and figure out, you know, with the people they've got, put some of these people together. Now, maybe one of those is back to Hyper and Shoko, but they just had the titles. That is an established team. But it's like you're starting to have, you know, but also these tag teams, like, keep them together. Because a lot of these tag teams form for the Max Hart tournament and then are like, bye, see you never again. So I think it would be good if they could, you know, Mifu Ishida, put her with someone. If you're not doing anything with her, put her with someone and have them team for 2 months and make up a name and see if something happens. Just would be useful just because I think we've really gotten to the era of, you know, and 1-2-1 million, obviously.
Well, that's
breaking
gone.
Up. Yeah. Not breaking up, but you know what I mean? They can't exist anymore. Like, I think it just happens that they've sort of lost these teams over the last number of months and years and haven't thought, oh, we need to put some people together to be a tag team.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if, okay, Daisy Monkey wins the Max Hart tournament and beats Ober Eats, who's their first challenger in the company?
Oof.
Like, you can't, like, there's, unless Yuka's coming back, and the answer is it's the Magical Sugar Rabbits.
Well, hold on. Yuka and Takeshita are teaming at Grand Princess.
Like, it is possible, but I'm just saying that I'm sort of making my point is that there isn't someone you can say, this is a really good established team. we have a new champion. We need to establish them, put this team in there. They can lose and give some rub to the champions. They don't really have that team anymore.
No.
Like, that was Neo Bushikigun. That was Bakuretsu Sisters. Like, that's what they did.
Yeah.
So, not a death knoll for the company, but just something to think about.
We need Saki-sama back, is what you're saying.
I mean, yeah. The main event was for the Princess of Princess title. Miyu Watanabe, the champion, successfully retaining against Suzume in 22 minutes and 28 seconds. Kelly, I went 5 stars.
Wow.
I just thought this was so good. And the thing I really loved about it was you can describe the story of this match in one sentence. It's so easy. You know, I sort of said that the Mirai and Endo match sort of had this and then missed the mark.
Mm-hmm.
The story was Suzume is going to do whatever she can to avoid taking the offense of Miyu.
Yeah, strong versus fast.
She is going to fight for her life, you know, fought for her life to not take the giant swing 2 times. You know, the first time held onto the leg, the second time getting caught by the head and then crawling into the ropes. You know, and it's like she has to avoid. She cannot stand in the ring and trade again. And very close to the end of the match, what happens? She gets in the ring and she starts trading forearms with Miyu and Mr. Haku's on commentary being like, this is a mistake.
Yep.
Like, she makes the mistake. She's down. She continues fighting. I mean, that teardrop into the ring a bell.
That was awesome.
Like, awesome. Like, huge reaction from me. But that was like, again, I have to avoid at all costs taking any of this offense because it will crush me. I just thought it was so well worked. I thought it was really exciting, you know, edge of the seat type of stuff. So that's why I went 5 stars. I just thought it was so good. Like, simple story. You're not talking about, oh, the story is I hurt my arm and then in the second half of the match I pretend my arm has never hurt in my whole life. Like, it was just a good story, and the story was well told and it made sense, and then it ended and you're like, yep, she tried to do this, and at the end of the day she made it for like 18 minutes and then all of a sudden the strategy didn't work and she lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said in my notes that Suzume really just put on a clinic in how to be evasive as a wrestler without just like, I'm running away from you. Like, it just, I don't know if I've ever seen another wrestler do that so well. So she put on maybe the best performance of her entire career in this match. And she like broke out a bunch of cool new stuff too. And I loved the rope walk into the face buster. Miyu was just perfect here too. Like, I went 4.5. I'm leaning more towards 4.75 now. I feel like in the very beginning of the year, I'm very like conservative about my star ratings, and then by the end of the year, I'm just like, fuck it, everything's 5. But so I think I'm bumping it up to 4.75 because this is a match where it's the more I think about it, the more I like it, and I really hope this kind of sets the tone for the rest of the year for Tokyo Joshi.
Yeah, I mean, another thing, you talk about the facebusters, but Suzume like hitting all those facebusters. It's like, this is what I'm trying to do, and I'm this is what I planned for, and so this is what I'm gonna do.
Yep.
Like, it's like she did so many, but it's like, that's the strategy. The strategy was, this is what I know I can do to hurt her, and she's not doing, you know, oh, I'm gonna pull out this random move, whatever. It's like, I gotta keep hitting these, and eventually they'll work. And then you've got the story for next time of, you know, the facebusters, they worked a little bit, but you didn't win. So what are you going to do next? Like, it sets up the next one. So I just thought, so smart. I mean, Miyu Watanabe, we talk about it seemingly every match. She has now, like, one of the best wrestlers in the world. And I just thought an amazing cap to the show. Super great. And I loved it. Five stars.
Yeah, this is, like I said when we started talking about this show, if I had to recommend this show to someone that doesn't watch Tokyo Joshi, I would just say watch the main. Because Miyu is so good.
I mean, not to go back to Dave and the Wrestling Observer again, he went 4 3/4.
That's insane.
He like never watches Tokyo Joshi.
He never watches anything that isn't like a stardom yes. match that someone hasn't forced him to sit down and watch.
So yeah, I think just I mean, a great start to the year. It would have been my number one match last year if it took place 4 days earlier. But yeah, great match. Definitely worth watching. I like the Mirai Endo match. So watch it and tweet. Don't tweet at us. Post at us. Post at us.
Skeet us.
And tell us which one of us is wrong. Tokyo Joshi also had a show on the 10th. They had a number one contendership six-way elimination match for the Princess of Princess title, won by Yuki Arai. Kelly, I know you watched that one.
I did. It was a match that I was excited about going into it and then got a lot less excited about it as it went on because it was very much a six-way, but only two of us will ever be in the same ring or be in the ring at the same time kind of match. And I don't know. That's boring to me. Like, it's the work was fine, but it was one of those where I'm like, you guys could be doing so much more interesting stuff. And then that makes me bored because of it. So I wasn't very into this match at all. And I'm a tad worried about a Yuki Arai main event.
Sendai Girls had a show on December 26th and a tag team title match. Baba Momo Banana defeating Team 200 Kilogram, Chihiro Hashimoto and Yu.
They did it.
They did it. And a good team to have the titles.
Yep.
So a title change there.
You know, and we talked about Yu never losing last week, and that was another where immediately they were just like, you know what, we're gonna listen to this show and see what these boys have to say. And you took a singles loss in Choco Pro of all places to Mesa Ruka.
We make things happen on this show.
We do.
Ice Ribbon had their Ribbon Mania show on the 31st at Corican Hall in front of 699 fans. So pretty good, especially considering the original main event had to change because Manami Katsu had a fever. So it ended up being a three-way Kaho Matsushita retaining the Ice Infinity title against Kararo Wakana and Yuka. Of course, immediately after the show, it was revealed that Yuka will be taking a leave of absence. I don't know.
The most cursed company.
Yeah, what do you say? But drawing 699 fans.
Yeah.
At Corican. So good for them. Marvelous had a show on December 28th. Some big news out of Marvelous is that Rin Katakura has returned to Japan. It seems like she's back now wrestling in Marvelous. She was on that 1228 show. Also on that 1228 show, the AAAW tag team titles. Magenta defeating Sari and Takumi Aroha to win those titles. So that an interesting result. That show also had another Senka and Sari Yamaoka singles match. So a pretty fun looking show there. Although I once again think Marvelous shows are not going up on Wrestle Universe. Like, and it feels like this is like the fifth time that they've been like, we're doing something, and then they don't do it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's on there. Whenever I go on Wrestle Universe to look for Marvelous, I have a hell of a time finding it.
I believe the last show they uploaded was from November.
That's not
so
right.
Maybe they're just behind, but yeah, that's Marvelous. And in Wave, Yuki Miyazaki officially retiring. That happened at the end of the year. And then on the 2nd of January, Saran and Yumi Oka retained their Wave tag team titles against Rina Amakura and Yuko Sakurai. So that is everything that's happened in the last 2 weeks. What is coming up? Well, it is the official 15th anniversary celebration of Stardom. They have a Korakuen Hall show on January 21st. I don't believe anything has been announced for that show yet. I couldn't find anything. Seedling. Okay, we're back to Seedling, Kelly. Ready for this?
Yes, we're circling around.
They have a show on the 13th, so coming up very soon. They're running a tournament, a singles tournament, single elimination, through April. The first rounds are happening, so there's four matches happening, two in January and two in February. And then the second round will be in March, and the finals will be in April. So on this 13th show, so they're doing a qualifying tournament for the last spot in the tournament.
Okay.
Keep up with me.
Yeah.
So they're going to have two matches on this 13th show, which is Miria Koga and Yuki Funa will face off against each other. Hanori Hana and Celine Mizora will face off against each other. The winners will then face off, and the winner of that will get in the tournament to face Nagisa Nozaki, although that match will happen in February. So those two matches will happen. Also, the first two matches of the first round, which will be Yuri against Mio Shirai and Hiroyo Matsumoto versus Mirai. Now, the interesting wrinkle is that every match that Hiroyo Matsumoto has is a title match.
Oh my God.
And I think if she loses, the winner will then have every match be a title match. But I'm like, Hiroyo Matsumoto versus Mirai and Yuri versus Mio Shirai. I'm like, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Better than these. And there's no high-speed title match, or there's no high-speed match on the card, Kelly. So no La Pedida and Kakadita for you to watch. But I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I was thinking, why hasn't Hiroyo Matsumoto defended her title? Well, it seems like she's going to be defending it every month.
Now, they were saving it up.
Well, I guess not February, because she'll either be through or not. But January, March, and April, I would assume. So that seems that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Kelly doesn't agree, but that's
no, okay. It's just like there's so much to this tournament where it's like, all right, there's a pre-tournament to get to the tournament, and then every match is a title match.
Look, gotta make it interesting.
It's very much the Wave school of what if we have four tournaments instead of one tournament.
Oz has a show on January 18th. Tokyo Joshi's Max Heart Tournament will be starting in the next 2 weeks. So here's how it will break down. There will be four first round matches on January 17th. Those matches will be Hyper Masao and Shoko Nakajima versus Miyu Yamashita and Kaya Torabami, Kira Summer and Chika Nanase versus Mizuki and Uda Takami, Raku and Ren Konatsu versus Max the Impaler and Palm Harajuku, Himawari and Shino Suzuki versus Yuki Arai and Mifu Ashida. So those will be the opening matches. The winner of those four matches will go on the 25th to face Daisy Monkey, Haru and Yuki Aeno, Miyu Watanabe and Rika Tatsumi, and Ober Eats. Then they will have more on the 31st. They'll have the semifinals on that day, and then the finals will be on the 14th of February. So right into the always bizarre layout of this bracket of the Max Heart Tournament. But that will be coming up.
I think the looking at the bracket, the upper left bracket is definitely where the winner is coming from.
Yes, because the winner of Miyu Kaya and Hyper and Shoko will face Daisy Monkey. So seems a good chance. And then that lower bracket, I would say, is low powered.
Yeah, like the first bracket where I'm just like, okay, so all three teams that I probably would have picked to win this tournament are right here in one concentrated area.
Marigold, what is happening? They're going back to Corican Hall. That show will have already happened by the time this comes out because it's on January 12th. They also have a Corican Hall on January 24th, which will be Mayu Iwatani's 15th anniversary. And that show will have a twin star title match, which will be Misa Matsui and Chiaki against the winners of the one night tournament, Sari Yamaoka and Shino. And then we'll have a main event of Mayu Iwatani versus Utami. So that is coming up in Marigold. And, you know, moving into the January period, a lot of shows happening over the new year. So a lot of promotions now beginning to quiet down a bit. So Kelly, we've reached the end. So it's time for our first 2026 Kelly's Corner.
Kelly's Corner in 2026. We're starting off with some manga. Dark Horse put out a very nice hardcover of the Old Boy manga that, you know, was eventually turned into the classic movie. It contains, this hardcover has the first four volumes of the series in one. Then there will be another hardcover to finish up the second half of the series in the next couple of months. Beautiful presentation, and this manga is great. It was such an easy read. I loved it. And it's different enough from the movie that I'm not entirely sure what's going to happen next. So it's very fun. If you've seen the movie, highly recommend picking this up.
Well, there you go. Our first Kelly's Corner brings the first episode of 2026 to a close. Thank you for joining us. And we will be back with you in 2 weeks' time for even more Joshi. So until then, stay cool.
Have a great summer.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.